Hello, everyone, and welcome to another one of our origin stories for our Daggerheart campaign, The Last Arcanist. I have an amazing performer, an individual I've got to know over the past few months that I'm so happy is at our table for this campaign. I will let this wonderful cast member introduce themselves, and then we'll come back over to me and I'll say my little spiel, but go ahead and take it away for me.
Hi, I'm Aubrey. This is my first actual play, very excited. I'll be doing another actual play very soon, a Marvel Multiverse actual play. You can find that on my Instagram whenever that comes out. My Instagram is Aubrey_Liliana with 4 A's at the end. Very excited. Oh, I'm so excited.
Hell yeah. We are so excited too. I am Kylie Rose, the head storyteller at Dicecape, your guide for this campaign, this Daggerheart campaign that we are so pumped to finally dive into. Just a heads up, we are using, at least for these origin stories, currently we are using the 1.5, the version 1.5 of the beta. We are hoping that by the time we start filming the actual show, that we will have the full copy in our hands. We are so excited. Darrington Press and everybody involved with this project, thank you so much for creating this super fun game. It's been so much fun to learn and introduce it to players. That being said, we are going to dive into Aubrey's character's origin story. I give a little bit of an insight to you of where this story all began and how maybe not what you quite expect. So, let us dive in. The village of Tallulah is dying. The sickness spreads faster than any cure, seeping into the bones of its people like rot in old wood. Yara, you drift between fever and clarity, trapped in visions you do not quite understand, visions of your father's sacrifice, a deal struck in whispered voices in the abyss watching you in the dark before a voice speaks out calling to you. Yara, child of Tallulah, you are not lost. You are becoming. This voice in whispers slips through your mind, Yara, like ink in water. You dream of a great river, a familiar one that runs through your village. Once crystal clear, the water mineral rich from the glacial runoff, the gloom peak sierras. Now the color of obsidian, its surface shifting like glass, and within it, these white eyes, hundreds upon hundreds watching. Does Yara try and speak to this voice that just spoke?
I think she would. I think she'd, like, sort of seeing all of this, she'd go, "Who's there?"
As you say, "Who's there?" you start to see the river that is around you rising, growing bigger, as if sentient, as this figure starts to take shape from it, almost spreading out into this massive veil. And as it swirls around you, there's this cold that kind of flows over you as there is no response from this voice that spoke with you. As this river swallows you whole and you wake up gasping, fever still gripping your body. Across the room, you see this man, your father. But to everyone else in the village, his name is Doc. You see him working tirelessly, looking over towards you, looking back, grinding herbs, measuring tinctures. But as he sees you wake, he grabs a cloth and rushes towards you to sit next to you in the seat to comfort you. As he places the cloth over your head and he says to you, "Just a dream, Firefly. Just a dream."
You.
And he just brushes her hair out of her face. And I think he helps her sit up. And he has a smile on his face. And I think Yara would know her father enough. This human man that has been gone for a time would know, despite that absence, the face he holds right now is one of trying to be stoic and strong for his daughter, but for his child. But beneath that, there's a worry that you can see. As he helps Yara sit up, could you describe what she looks like?
She's a young adolescent girl, dark skin, light brunette hair that's in braids. Probably her dad did them, but he's not good at braiding. She definitely looks like worn out, like she's been through it recently. But like on her face, despite all of the things she's gone through, like there's the glimmer of hope, like the glimmer of like things are going to get better. I just know it. And I think as her dad like sits her up, she'll like put her like a hand on his face and go, "It's gonna be okay."
Yes, everything will be all right. Here, drink this water. It's fresh. It's from the Ayana Forest. It will help bring down your fever a bit. And you would see he grabs a water skin, and he opens it up and hands it to Yara. You have enough strength to be able to hold the water skin. The water is refreshing. It is cool. And there is this moment of relief, that kind of the fever that you feel dissipates for a moment. And he, I think you see him like look to, from where he's sitting, he looks, would be to his left, and you would see two more beds in this room. And laying in them would be your sisters, Kamara and Zuri. Yeah, sorry. I'm like, I had a brain cramp for a second. Yeah. And he looks over at them, and you see like the rise and fall of their breaths. They're both sleeping. You can see he's placed cloths over their heads as well. And you would hear, Kamara, she would say, he's watching. And she's uttering this in her sleep. And you would see your father gets up. He walks over towards his workbench, and you see him grab a couple tinctures, and he moves over to be next to her. And he looks over at Yara and just says, "Drink up and keep resting." And you would see him pop open the top and give her the tincture and just kind of move her pillow a bit. It's soaked. So he goes over and he has like another cloth that he switches it out and goes and puts the other basically pillow cover over to the side. It's just sopping with sweat. And at that point, Yara, as you kind of see all of this in this moment, your sister's in a similar condition. What's going through Yara's head in this moment as she sees her all of this?
I think the first thing with like her sister saying he's watching, the first thing is like, does she see what I see? What I saw? Like, is there something more going on here? But I feel like she's going to like push that thought down. And it's just like, it was just a dream. But we're all sick. It's nothing. It means nothing. She'll keep drinking. I think she's very in tune with like what her father's feeling. I feel like she would be like, she would like be watching him and noticing like what he's feeling, and feel like the need, even though she's the child and he's the father in this, like in this moment, to like comfort him, despite the fact that she's also sick. And she's she's like drinking, and like she'll be like, you know, one day I'm gonna be taking care of you.
I think as you say that, he looks over to you, and there's this, despite the heaviness of this situation, he smiles over at Yara. There's this deep admiration towards her, and he says, I know.
I'm going to be a doctor one day.
I have no doubt in my mind. And you're going to be better than me.
No one's better than you.
Well, I don't know about that. And I think that would, his demeanor would shift again, kind of that moment of levity that you brought him, as that gravity of like him hearing, no, you're the best, or, you know, he would, I think that would hit him in a way as he looks at you, he looks at Kamara and looks over at Zuri, and there's that doubt. He is supposed to be the best at this. Why can't he fix this? Why is this happening? And as you see that going through his mind, being intuitive enough to pick up on that, you would hear the sound of footsteps coming towards the room. And I will say, just to kind of give a little bit bigger, a better of a picture of the space you're in, it's just like a long, long room. There's three like twin size beds. There's a little like wooden workbench where there's different like herbs and like a mortar and pestle, different types of solutions in vials and in glass jars. But then there's a doorway that comes into that room where there's like, that leads to the main living space of the house. And then there's also a window at the far end of the room where you see it's kind of like afternoon light, sunlight starting to just poke in. And you would see this individual walk in, a younger man. He's probably, I would say, a young man, like probably mid-20s. He's wearing some nice robes. Another healer in town, you would know, Jabari. And he sees Yara up, and he smiles towards her. And and then he looks over at the other two, your other two sisters, and to your father. And he says, Doc, we have another 10 that have fallen ill. We need more tinctures, if you're able. And you would see your father look towards him, nod. And he would get up very solemnly and walk towards his workbench and grab the few vials he has left. And he looks back to Yara and he says, Dear Firefly, can you look over your sisters while I'm gone? I won't be gone too long. Back as soon as I am able.
She'll like give him like a little salute. She'll say, I got it.
Oh God, I think he like has to hold. I think you see him give a little wipe of his eye and follows follow Shibari out through the door. Almost made me cry. emotions. Okay. Oh. So he walks out, leaving you here in this room. And I think as he leaves, though, there's still this, like, the last time he said he, you know, he'll promise he'll be back as soon as he is able. He left for a bit of time. And I think that would be something that perhaps would linger a bit with Yara. I guess as she sees her dad, her father leave, her sisters gravely ill around her, what is going through Yara's head in this moment? Kind of as all of this kind of comes together here.
I don't know. I think she feels like a sense of responsibility. Like she's like, her dad told her to look after her siblings. She's like, mm-hmm. I may be the youngest, but like they're going through it right now. So she's mm-hmm. like, I just have to like be the best for him. Like mm-hmm. I have to like almost like force myself to be better than I really am in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
So she's like she'll get out of bed and like go over to his desk and like sit in his desk, like wrap her blanket around her and like watch her siblings, make sure everything's okay. And she's mm-hmm. just like thinking about it. And I think like she has like her knees up to her chest in the chair. This is probably a bigger chair because she's a child.
So
she has like her knees up to her chest in her chair, wrapped in her blanket. And she's just like, I think, oh, this is sad. I think she's just sort of like repeating to herself, like, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay.
As you say that to yourself, I think you would see Kamara kind of she was shaking a lot from before the tincture was given, but I think you would see Zuri. You would see her sit up. Sure. Like try and start to sit up, and she would look over towards Yara. And I think she would say, I wanted to tell you that I know I was hard on you a lot of times, especially what happened with, and I think she would say that without saying the rest of it, but there's an indication to what she's speaking towards.
She goes, I know.
And she would say, you are my sister. And I love you dearly.
She smiles and she goes, you know I love you too, right? Even when you're mean.
Well, if we all make it through this, I'll make a point to not be so mean. As she smiles a little bit over at Yara, and as she does, though, you see her just and you just see like blood dripping out of her hand from her coughing, and she just kind of, she looks at it and then looks over at Yara and just this deadpan stare. And you see her just like lean back against the bed frame and just kind of scrunch up her feet, almost like Yara is, just very childlike in this moment, as there's this fear in her eyes as she just coughed up blood. And she just sits there and just kind of stares forward.
I think Yara will like walk over to Zuri and like get in the bed with her, like hug her, and she goes, "I think you meant when we get through this."
Yeah. And I think she wraps her arm around her, just pulls her in, and gives her a little kiss on the top of her head. And as that happens, I think that prior relief that you felt earlier from drinking that fresh water starts to fade a bit. And there's almost this, it almost feels like a lightheadedness. I would equate it to like a vertigo feeling that Yara would feel as you feel consciousness ebbing and flowing. And you would start to feel like yourself falling forward, and you would feel like, I think as you fall forward, you would feel Yuri like try and grab you, and you hear her calling to you, kind of like almost kind of that tunnel, like you're in a tunnel, and you would just hear her saying, Yara, and there would be this like turbulence you would feel as you drift into this fever dream again. And as that happens, Yara, you would feel as if like your body is almost suspended, floating in darkness. Your body becomes weightless as that fever continues to burn within you, this just kind of seeking deep inside your marrow, and then you feel strangely cold, and as you drift back into sleep, dreams coming once again as this darkness kind of fades, you see yourself standing outside of your house. You see that river again that you did earlier in your previous dream. But what's different this time is that you see your father standing on its edge, a lantern in his hand, as the darkness of the night comes over the village. You see him drop to his knees, staring into the water as it churns. And you would see it's reflecting a sky far darker than it should be. Then you see a shimmer. White, shifting eyes emerge from the depths, like twinkling stars, and these tendrils of liquid shadow reaching toward the shore. Do you go to him, or do you watch from a distance?
I think I sort of like slightly approach him, but like not get close, and I like call out his name.
Okay. Did you call out your father's name? It is as if he doesn't hear you. He just stares into the water as you hear a familiar voice speak out. "You seek salvation, healer. I can lift the gloom from their fragile bodies. But salvation comes with sacrifice." You would hear this. Your father would kind of shoulders slump, staring down into the water. You would hear him say very quietly, this desperation his voice. I understand. Whatever is required, just save them. The whole village, my daughters. Please. I beg of you. There is a pause. The river grows louder. You hear your father speak these words. The river starts to swell, much like it did in that dream you had earlier before. Does Yara do anything in this moment?
She like rushes for her dad at this point, hearing all of this, and like goes to hug him, and she's like, I'm okay, like, Dad, I'm okay.
As you hug him, you feel the physical form of his body, but he seems to be completely unaware of your existence in this moment. You feel him, you feel his warmth. But there is not that. It is not reciprocated.
I think she go, Dad, why can't you hear me?
And as you say that, you kind of catch out of your peripheral. You see he's staring, and you see this the inky surface of the water splitting, and you see that he's staring at reflections of you, your sister Kamara, and Zuri, standing on the other side. And you see, as you see your reflection, there's a difference. All of your eyes are like the stars, like twilight, and you see all of these small, tiny, white beady eyes within. And you would feel your father tense as you are trying to get his attention. I'm going to have you roll something right now.
Okay.
In this moment. I'm going to have you make a presence roll for me.
Okay.
In this dreamlike state. We'll use the stats that we have here. I'm going to say this is going to be a roll of 12, a DC of 12 on this check. So, let me know what you get.
I failed. That's only a 9 with fear.
Okay. Okie dokie. Would you like to succeed with a consequence? A further consequence beyond what you failed? Beyond the fear that's already here?
That's so enticing to me. So, yes.
Okay. There's a moment in this dream where you see your father as you call to him. He looks towards you. And you see him, because he's down, like, it'd probably be about eye level, just based on age and everything. He would look into Yara's eyes. And as the water swells up, he pulls you in to almost protect you as this water rushes around you. And you hear... He whispers into your ear, he says, I will do whatever it takes to make sure you and your sisters are safe. And as he says that, you feel this, it almost feels like a very thin piece of thread, a claw, just kind of like a long fingernail kind of just like pull, and you feel that. And there's a moment kind of as you succeed with that consequence, your father reaches out to stop that from happening. And as it does, you see along his arms, all of these like these scars start to form, these boils starting to form on his arm. And in that, this kind of the river swallows you both. And you wake up again. You are in your bed. Your father is sitting next to you once more. But in that moment, as you wake up, you hear within this room, as you see that it is completely dark out at this point, but you would know based on the color of the sky, it's kind of that in-between time between night ending and morning beginning. You hear echoing in your head that same voice again say, "You have until daybreak, but once the sun rises, those inflicted with the gloom will be cured, the exception of three, who shall be my queens. Help me oversee my Tenebrous Legion." And then that's when you hear your father's voice kind of break through that as you fully come to, and he just says, "Sorry, Firefly." And you see your father there. In his hand, you see kind of his arm is all scarred and the boils are on it. But he like quickly covers it up, and he just holds Yara. He's like, "Don't have much time. You have to trust me, okay? Can you trust Father?"
I think she looks up at him, and sort of like remembering what he said to her in like that vision she got. She goes, "Whenever I am with you, I feel safe."
He nods and he says, "All right. Just stay here. I'm going to do something. We'll keep you and your sister safe until I can figure out a way to break this." And you would see in his hand, he's holding these three stones. They have an iridescent color to them. Very beautiful. They're attached to these like leather strips, like a necklace essentially. And he hands one to you and he says, "Hold on to this."
"I will."
He kisses her on the top of her head and kind of just like grabs her, you know, gives her a little squeeze underneath her chin. And he walks over to Kamara, wakes her up. She struggles to get up. She's probably the worst off right now. He's very gentle with her. And he actually takes her hands and puts the stone within her hands and just closes, like puts them together. And he looks at her and he says, "It'll all be over soon. You won't be suffering anymore. I promise." And he then walks over to Zuri, who has pushed herself up, and she's looking over at Yara. And she tries to get up, and you see your father rush over to her. And she kind of like pushes him away. But he ends up just helping her, and he helps her walk over to Kamara's bed, and I think she reaches over to Yara to join the two of them.
Yara will walk over.
Yeah. And he hands her the stone. And all four of you are there. Kamara's in the middle, Yara and Zuri to the side. And your father has kind of crisscrossed legs in front of all you at the end of the bed. And you see he pulls out this this pendant. And I think you would know it's your mother's, something he's held on to for all these years. And you see it almost has like these little like mechanisms to it, and he starts to turn it. You hear all these little clicks. And then it opens up, and you see floating out of it is this little mote of light. And it's beautiful. It's like blue and orange as it swirls around. And you see it expanding. And as you see it expanding, outside, the sunlight is starting to poke through. And you see him look over in desperation. But then he looks back at all of you and he smiles. And you see it expand a little bit more. And you would see as this dwimmer is flowing around, these strands start to flow out. And you would see them, and you would feel it like kind of this like wraps around your fingers. It's very comforting and warm. A mother's touch, if you will. And as these threads connect, you would feel that same tug that you felt in that dream as something is pulling from you would feel it in your heart. But you see your father focus. He looks again one last time at his three daughters. And he says, I love you all. And you have my word. I will find a way so we can be together again. I promise.
Yara just looks up at her dad and goes, I love you.
I love you too. And Zuri would say the same thing. And even Kamara would manage to say, love you, Dad. And as that happens, you see something, the room starts to get darker. The walls almost feel like they're pushing in on you. And you see your father with this look of determination. He grabs the Dwimmer that resides, that is pulsing out. And you see him crush it in his hand as this energy releases out. And you feel you were being pulled into the twilight. And you feel as if someone reaches a hand to you, you almost see this ethereal version of your mother as she takes all of your hands and holds you. And you would feel your father too, this ethereal version of him, grab your hands and you feel yourselves float into this place of stasis, of limbo, where there is some sense of realization of what's happening around you. You would see your father collapse to the ground. The room itself would start to illuminate from the sun rising. As you are now contained within the soul gem, protected from whatever fate was waiting for you in the twilight. And he would help your father up, but you would see your father's body starting to deteriorate, almost immediately. He would look over at Jabari, who would be in the state of shock, kind of taking a few steps back. He gets up, looks around in desperation. He goes over, he collects the soul stones, puts them on his neck so his daughters are always with him. And he rushes out back to a little fenced-in backyard that you have next to your house. And you would see through this, as you're kind of like in this ethereal world, in this stasis, as your dad puts you and your sisters around his neck, as you're held in these soul gems, you see him rushing towards his workshop. And you would see him light a few candles, and resting there is this prototype of something he's been working on for all these years. He limps into his workshop, and you see he moves past these like rusted metal limbs and unfinished projects. And you see at the center of this stands this Clank body. Something he's never tested. He takes all the necklaces off again, and he rests them on a little holder. And I think it's starting, as you're in like in that stasis mode, Yara, you would start to see the kind of that vision, that initial like energy that is within you, kind of your inherent tie to Dwemer, is starting to fade as you go into this form, into this preservation. You would see him look at this Clank with the heaviness in him, in his eyes, knowing he has to do something in order to make sure he keeps his promise to his girls. And you see him with the last of his strength, as it almost looks like it's just like muscle atrophy. You see him just like, his muscles are just fading. His face is just becoming more gaunt, as his attempt to pull one on this being that has rid the village of gloom. And you would see Jabari come in, and like you would hear kind of faintly echoing him telling that the gloom has been cured. But your father would look back to him and tell him to leave. And you would see him grab a couple instruments, and this almost like this long syringe, and it has like wires and things attached to it. He would take it and attach it to this Clank. And you would see him move his fingers along the syringe, and you see these runes illuminate. And he would take it and plunge it into where his heart would be, as he drops to his knees. And you see him look at the three of you. And you just see him mouth, "I love you." As his eyes close, and you kind of see his body just turn to dust. And there would be a moment of time as that preservation stasis is getting closer to making it hard to see outside of this kind of misty gray that you find yourselves within. You hear the sounds of mechanisms whirring, cogs moving, and you see a hand reach, this metal hand reach, and it holds it up, and you see these eyes, they're cold mechanical lenses, what was once flesh, now metal. And he holds you all up to him, and the last thing you hear Or actually, I'm going to say before he says that, as Yar is seeing all this, what is going through Yar's mind in this moment?
I think she has like one thought that's at the forefront of all of this like craziness is like, mm-hmm. all she can think of is like, is this what it took? Like, was this the cost of like saving lives?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what's sort of running through her head right now.
Yeah. Damn. Yeah, that's pretty heavy. So as that kind of that thought is lingering, as this slumber starts to hit you, and you're thinking that, you hear him say, as you go into this place of rest, you hear him say, "I'm still here. And I'll find a way so we can be together again." And as he says that, that sleep comes over you. But you do not dream. It is just a slumber. And I would say as that happens, I think we'll end it there. And that's where we'll end our little origins, our first origin story for Doc, for Yara. Aubrey's the first piece of Aubrey's character story. So
I mean, wow.
I think that was a heavy one.
I fully cried at one point.
That was I'm gonna, viewers, here's a little I mean, we're not telling you anything, but man, I'm sorry. That's all I'm gonna say right now. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry too. Because
you think, yeah,
this was our brain child. Wait.
Yeah. Oh, we nursed it into this world.
I know.
Oh gosh, they're gonna grow up to be such a little beautiful thing. I'm so excited. Oh yeah, yeah, y'all. Just buckle up, because tell you what, that is that's just a little appeteaser, if you will. Mm-hmm.
An amuse bouche.
Amuse bouche. Yes. Because hot diggity damn. Yeah, I'm so excited to explore that further. With that said, thank you for tuning in for another one of our Daggerheart The Last Arcanist origin stories. And we have many more to come. And thanks for being here and getting a little glimpse into the past of these characters' stories. And we are so excited to share more of that with you. So until next time, we'll see you. I used to say in the wastelands, but I'm still trying to figure it out. We'll see you out.
I think the last one was the realm of Atlantia.
Yeah, Atalantia. The realms of Atalantia. I'm going to say we'll see you amongst the Scarlet Dunes.
Ooh, so, okay.
Yeah. All right. Cool, y'all. Good. See you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.